inviting me and for giving me the opportunity to give this lecture here. So the title of my talk is Characterizing Graphs with Gram Dimension 4. So this is joint work with Antonis Varvitsiotis, who is a PhD student at CWI in Amsterdam. So I will maybe, here's a brief outline of the talk. So first I will define what I mean by Gram dimension of a graph. So it's a graph parameter which I will define. Then I will link it to other graph parameters which are studied, and in particular it's very closely related, as you will see throughout the talk, with Euclidean distance metrics completions. And then I will go on with with the result, how to characterize graphs with this Gram dimension at most 4. And at the end I will end up with linking to an extension of this graph parameter which deals with extreme Gram dimension of a graph. So let's start maybe just to fix some notation to be sure that we all know what we're talking about. So it's very classical notation, so nothing. So Sn plus is just a set of symmetric semi-definite matrices. Sn plus plus is when you ask if the matrices are positive definite. And what we will deal with graphs. So Sn S plus of G is, so G is a graph, V is a set of nodes, usually just with nodes, n nodes, 1 up to n. And E is a set of edges. And then what we do is we project the cone of positive semi-definite matrices. We project it on the subspace, which is indexed by edges and by the nodes. So throughout, when I talk of a node, I will view it as a diagonal entries. So this means that if I have a matrix n by n, so it's indexed by the node set, it's symmetric. And I project on the node, so it means I project on the main diagonal, and I project on the edge set. So say this is the edge set. And by symmetry, I take the other part also. So in other words, what is S plus of G? It's nothing but the set of partially specified matrices. So when they are specified on the whole diagonal and on the edge set, which can be completed to a PSD matrix. So that's what S plus G is. So S plus G, set of all partial matrices completable to a PSD matrix. And very often without loss of generality, we can assume that all diagonal entries are positive, so non-zero, otherwise you get trivialities. And if they are positive, then you can as well rescale and assume the diagonal entries are equal to 1. So then we will deal with positive semi-definite matrices with diagonal entries 1. And this set is known in the literature as the elliptop, and it's denoted by En. And again, if we have the elliptop En, we can project on the edge set, and then we call this E of G, the elliptop of the graph. So then if I write EG, it means that I know that all diagonal entries are equal to 1, so then I just forget them. If we have a matrix A, G of A denotes the support of the matrix. So it corresponds to all positions. So the edges are precisely the positions where you have a non-zero entry. And then there is another cone which is studied in the literature, which is PG, which is a set of all PSD matrices whose support is contained in the graph. So all PSD matrices which are zero outside of the graph. And so this cone is in fact the dual cone to the cone S plus of G. This is well known. Okay? There is a duality between these two cones, the set of partially completable matrices and the set of matrices with support in the graph. And finally, this cone is also considered in the literature. It's P equal G, where you ask that not only the support is contained in the graph, but you want that the support is equal to the graph. So zero outside of the graph and non-zero on the graph. So that's it for the notation. So let me introduce what the Gram dimension is about. So suppose we have a vector X, which has entries on the main diagonal and on the edge set of the graph. Then what is the Gram realization of X? That's a set of vectors, V1 up to Vn, which realize X. By this I mean that the inner product of the vectors, Vi dot Vj, is equal to Xij at every edge and at every diagonal entry. So that's a Gram realization of the vector. And the smallest k for which you can find such a Gram realization. So the smallest k for which you can find such a Gram realization is known as let's call it the Gram dimension of X. Okay? So that's what we call GD of GX. So we have this notion, and then let's call the gram dimension of a graph, GD of G, as the maximum possible gram dimension of the vectors. So in other words, this is the smallest k for which, given any partially specified matrix which can be completed, then you can complete it to a PSD matrix of rank at most k. This is what the gram dimension of a graph is. A small remark immediately is that in this maximization here, you don't have to look at all partially specified matrices which are completable. It's enough to look at those which at a dense subset. So for instance, it's enough to look at all partially specified matrices which can be completed to a PD matrix. So in other words, it's enough to look for all x which lie in the elliptop of the graph. So this kind of genericity assumption which can be handy to have. So that's what the gram dimension is about. So let's immediately think about one possible application to look at this parameter is the following, is that it can be used to bound the rank to semi-definite programs. So in the combinatorial optimization, you often have a program which is a discrete program, and it's hard to solve, so then you set up an SDP relaxation, and usually you would like to have an SDP, you would like to have some ways to be able to say, I solved the SDP and I can get a solution which is small rank. Ideally, if it has rank 1, then it solves your original optimization problem, but typically you would like to have small rank solutions to your SDPs. So if you have such an SDP, general SDP, let's make up this graph G, which is aggregated sparsity pattern of the SDP, which simply means that these are all the positions where you have a non-zero entry in either the constraint or in the objective function. That's the aggregated sparsity pattern. And then it follows from the definition that if the SDP has an optimal solution, then it will have one which has rank at most a gram dimension. So if the aggregated sparsity pattern is well behaved and you are able to bound its gram dimension, then it tells you that any SDP with this sparsity pattern will have an optimal solution of rank at most. This can be seen as a way of bounding ranks of optimal solutions to SDPs. Okay, so that's one motivation. Let's see some other graph parameters which are very closely related and have been quite a lot. Yes. This doesn't use optimality, actually. Good point. Actually, so if you have, would be nice, I mean, this gram dimension doesn't use the fact that you could choose your x to be an extreme point, but this doesn't use it. So any x which satisfies this will have, doesn't you? So there is still some room to improve. Yes, it's a good point. So the gram dimension of the graph is defined as the maximum possible gram dimension of all partially specified matrices. So there is a very special case, very special partially specified matrix is simply put 1 on the diagonal and put 0 on the edge set. And so the gram dimension of the graph is at least the gram dimension of 0. And this parameter, the gram dimension of 0, has been quite a lot studied. This simply corresponds to orthogonal representations of graphs. So what is an orthogonal representation? It's a set of non-zero vectors. You can just choose them to be unit vectors with a lot of generality, which have inner product zero outside of the graph. And then the minimum dimension of such a space where you can find such an orthogonal representation, so this corresponds with what we defined before. So the gram dimension of zero, but now you specify zero outside of the graph. So in other words, this is the minimum rank of a PSD matrix supported by the graph. So such orthogonal representations come up a lot in combinatorial optimization. For instance, they come up if you look at problems dealing with chromatic numbers or the Crick number or the theta number. So here is a so-called sandwich inequality which you can make about this parameter. So the gram dimension of zero is bounded by the chromatic number, and it's bounded below by the theta number and by the Crick number. So if the chromatic number of the graph is at most something, then of course the gram dimension of zero is also bounded by this something. And for with this result of Peters, which shows that it's in fact an if and only if for chromatic number at most 3. So the chromatic number is at most 3 if and only if the Gram dimension is at most 3. So as a consequence of this theorem, you immediately obtain that it's hard to compute the Gram dimension. So it's already hard to compute it for, and actually, so it's hard already if you restrict to planar graphs. For planar graphs, checking whether it's 3 colorable is hard. So already for planar graphs, it's hard to compute this. So computing the Gram dimension of 0 is already hard, but so at least some situations when it becomes easy. So for instance, if instead of looking at orthogonal representations, general ones, you look at orthogonal representations which have some genericity property. If you ask this in general position, meaning that any k vectors are linearly independent. Then there is a nice result of Lova, Sachs, and Schreiber, which shows that such a general orthogonal representation general position will exist if and only if the graph is n minus k connected. So then you can compute this k in this case when you restrict yourself to orthogonal representations in general position. So to finish with some parameters which are related, there's another one which has been which is now a lot studied in the literature, in particular in the literature of linear algebra, is the so-called the minimum PSD rank, which is almost the same, but now instead of you want to have an orthogonal representation, but you ask that it's 0 exactly outside of the graph. So you want that the vectors are orthogonal if you see a non-edge, but only if you see a non-edge. So in other words, this is the minimum rank of a PSD matrix whose support is equal to the graph. And there is really a whole industry of papers which are dealing with these graph parameters. So I just mentioned one result which is most closely related to what I just said. So we saw before that this one is bounded by the chromatic number. Well, this one is not bounded by the chromatic number, but it's upper bounded by the click cover number, which is the minimum number of clicks covering the edge set. And for instance, they can show that you have a quality if the graph is chordal. So much for this special case of the Gram dimension of the zero vector. So let's now go back to the Gram dimension of a graph. So a few things about complexity. So about complexity again, about complexity of computing the Gram dimension of a vector. So we have just seen before that it's hard to compute the Gram dimension of zero. So here's the status what you can say about the general complexity of computing the Gram dimension of a vector X. It's hard to check whether it's Gram dimension 3, but it's also hard for any k at least 3. I give the argument in a second. And so this was for the zero vector, this was when the graph is planar. You could already restrict yourself to the class of planar graphs. And you have also a hardness result if you restrict even to the class of, if your graph is just a circuit. And this is also already hard for k equal to 2. So first, how to prove a result? So we have a hardness result for k equal to 3. How to derive from this result a hardness result for any k at least 3? Well, simply use this small fact here, which shows that if you have a graph G and you have some vector X which is on the graph G, what you can do is build a larger graph by adding an apex node. So this is what I call the suspension of G, and so here you keep X, and on the new edges you simply assign value 0. So this of course gives you again a partially specified G which has PSD completion. And by adding, if you add only 0, you have to go up by 1 in the smallest dimension. So this is why you have that the Gram dimension of the new data is the old dimension plus 1. So this immediately yields this hardness result. And so this gives the hardness result for k at least 3. And now we just have to see what the hardness result for k equal to 2. So for k equal to 2, you just look at the cycle. So if you have a cycle, so you just assign on the edges, you assign cosine of numbers, cosine A1, cosine A2, and so on, up to cosine AN. And it's not difficult to see that this has a Gram realization in the plane if and only if the angles satisfy such an equation. So, and from this, then you immediately get that you can reduce the partition problem, so it's NP hard to have this. So, this is analogous of to the Sachs proof in the case of ED of Euclidean distance matrices. So, this brings us that let's now immediately see what the link between the distance geometry problem. So, which is a problem which is very much studied in the literature and also by several people in this room. So, the distance geometry problem is the analogous problem, but instead of looking for completions in terms of Gram matrices, you look at completions in terms of distance matrices. So, if you're given a graph and a list of numbers, distances on the edges, and then you want to find the Euclidean distance realization, which is a set of vectors, p1 up to pn, which has the property that dij is equal to the Euclidean distance of pi minus pj square, say. And then you have the same game. You may want to look at the smallest dimension where you can find this realization, so that would give you the Euclidean distance dimension of d. And if you look at the maximum possible over all d, then you get the Euclidean dimension of the graph. So here is a first small lemma which gives immediately a link between these two notions. It's not surprising that the two notions are very closely related. And this is based on well-known connection between Euclidean distance matrices and positive semi-definite matrices, and it uses again the suspension of the graph. So it's written here. So here is your graph G, you add a node, and if you have a little x which is defined, which corresponds to the PSD problem, then you define a distance. You put on the all these edges, you put the distance from 0 to I, and this corresponds to the XII's. And here is a relation which tells you how to relate the XIJ to the distances on the edge set. But the point is that you have a Gram realization of X if and only if you have a distance realization of D. And this equivalence gives you directly the fact that the Gram dimension of a graph is equal to the Euclidean dimension of the suspension of the graph. So this is the first link between the two parameters. So I've just recalled it here. Second property of the Gram dimension is that it's easy actually to relate the Gram dimension of the suspension with the Gram dimension of the graph itself. So the Gram dimension of the suspension is the Gram dimension of the graph plus one. So one inequality we already saw. And for the other inequality, you just do a Schur complement argument. So that's easy. So what about relating the Euclidean dimension of the suspension with the Euclidean dimension? So this inequality is easy. You just build up a specific example which shows you this inequality here. On the other hand, it is not clear whether equality holds. So this is open question to you. I hope some of you can give me the answer. Does equality hold in this inequality? So is it true that the Euclidean dimension of the suspension is equal to the Euclidean dimension of the graph plus one? If this would be true, then this would immediately imply that studying one or the other is the same thing, so both problems would be the same. But I don't know the answer. So there is one inequality, but I don't know the other inequality. So then, as we don't know the answer to this, this still suggests that we would like our goal would be to understand what are the graphs whose Gram dimension is at most something. And we cannot, so there is a lot of research which have been done on the Euclidean dimension, but we cannot derive them directly. So we have to start up again. So as I just said, so there is a lot of work which has been done on the Euclidean dimension. So let me recall, in particular by Maya Belk and Bob Connelly. And so they've characterized a graph whose Euclidean dimension is at most 4. And let me recall their results. So first of all, one can show that the Euclidean dimension is a minor monotone parameter. So if you have a graph, if you delete an edge or you contract an edge, then the Euclidean dimension doesn't go up. And The nice thing is when you have a graph parameter which is minor monotone, then you know by the Robertson-Seymour theory that it can be characterized by finitely many forbidden minors. So then the name of the game is clear, try to find the forbidden minors. And this is what Maya Belk and Bob Connelly have done. They've characterized, they've shown that there are precisely two forbidden minors for the Euclidean dimension at most three, and these are K5 and the octahedron. So in our case, well, again, the Gram dimension is minor monotone, and we show the same result. The Gram dimension is at most four, if and only if it doesn't have a K5 or the octahedron as a minor. So again, if you would have been to show that the EDM of the suspension is equal to EDM of G plus one, I can stop the talk, because this would follow directly from the result. But we were not able to show this. So then we sit down and we study their papers and we do the same. And this is what I want to do next, to show you, give you an idea how to prove this result or to prove this result. It will turn out that the same technique can be adapted and you get the same. So actually we will follow the lines of the papers of Belk and Connelly and mixed up with I come also from semi-definite programming, so I will use semi-definite programming technique. So we use techniques which are introduced by Anthony So and Yin Yu Ye in the setting of the EDM, but we put them back in the setting of Gram matrices. Good, so how would the proof go? So let's call GK the class of graphs of Gram dimension at most K. We want to understand this class. So first of all, it's closed undertaking minors. This is what you have already seen. And another nice property is closed undertaking click sums. So click sums is the following. So if you have a two graph, so you have a graph which contains, say, a click, and you have another graph which contains a click, well, what you do is you identify the two clicks. And this gives you the click sum of the two graphs. So that the class is closed undertaking click sums, it just comes from the following fact that if you have, say you have a matrix, two matrices which have their index sets have an intersection, and the two matrices coincide on the intersection. So if this is positive semi-definite of rank at most k, if the second one is also positive semi-definite of rank at most k, then you can complete what's missing in such a way that you can get a positive semi-definite matrix of rank at most k. So this is what's at the back of this, and this simple thing will be used a lot in the proof. So what more do we know? Well, of course, the complete graph on k nodes lies in GK, and it doesn't lie in GK minus one. So next thing we can say is that take click sums of clicks, they also lie in GK. And take subgraphs of them, they also lie in GK. So subgraphs of click sums of K clicks are precisely what's known as the partial K minus one trees. So all partial K minus one trees lie in GK. So then it's tempting, is it the whole thing? So the natural thing to do is to look whether there are graphs in GK which are not partial K minus one trees. And for small k, what helps a lot is that the class of partial K trees is also minor closed, and the forbidden minors are known for small k. So at least for K at most three, the minors are known. So this is what will guide the proof. So okay, let's do the first simple case. Let's understand what are the graphs in G2. So if a graph is in G2, it cannot contain a K3. Hence, it's a forest. In other words, it's a partial one tree. So a forest is a click sum of edges. So you're in G2. So that's it. This characterizes which graphs are in G2, if and only if they don't have a K3 minor. So let's do the same for G3. If a graph is in G3, it cannot have a K4 minor. These are precisely the series parallel graphs, which coincide with the partial two trees. And then you are in G3. So G3 is characterized by excluding K4. So let's move on to the next case. The good thing for partial K3s is that the forbidden minors are known. So there are four of them, K5, the octahedron, V8, and C5 times C2. I will draw the graphs. But and the theorem says that gram dimension is most four if and only if no K5 and no K22 minor. So out of these four minors, two of them are good and two of them are bad. So sketch of proof, first of all, you show that K5 and K22, so the octahedron, are bad because they have gram dimension too large, 5. That's the first sketch, the first step. Second step of the proof, so we have already one direction. If the gram dimension is at most 4, then it doesn't have those two minors. So, and we want to have the reverse implication. So, and then the key is that if a graph is, we can assume that the graph is too connected, because otherwise if you have a cut node, it's enough to look at the two connected pieces. So let's take a graph which is too connected and doesn't have K5 and the octahedron as a minor. Then it can be shown that it's contained in a click sum of copies of K4, V8, C5 times C2. So if you take a graph like on the right-hand side, it looks like this. So you see that there are only three building blocks, K4 is trivially good, it has trivially a gram dimension most 4. So to conclude the proof, only thing to do now is to show that V8 and C5 times C2 are good. So that's the third step, to show that these two graphs are good. And this is exactly the same program as in the proof of Belk and Connelly. And just as in the case, the tedious part of the proof consists now to show that these two graphs are good. So it's maybe the time I should show you what these two graphs are. So V8, so you take a cycle. This is V8, and you add the main diagonals. This is V8 and C5 times C2, so this is the Cartesian product of a 4 cycle with an edge. So these are these two graphs, which have to be shown to be good. So before going on with the details how to show this, let me remark that if we can show this, then this will imply that this is the same thing as, because of what we saw before, this is the same thing as showing that the Euclidean dimension of the suspended graph is equal to 4. And in turn, this implies that if you delete the suspended node, you go down by one dimension. So at least this implies this previously known result. It could still be that there is a shortcut and there is no work to do, but this is stand of how we stand today. Okay, so maybe first before going, let me just give you a hint why the octahedron is bad. So the octahedron is this. So let's see. This is the octahedron. So what you do is you label all the nodes by the standard unit vectors, E1, E2, E3, E4, E5, and except here you take the sum of these two. So this is the labeling you choose. So this gives you a PSD matrix, and then you just remember the entries on the graph, and what you show is that this PSD matrix is the only completion of its projection. So it has rank 5, it's the only completion of its projection. So this shows that the projection has a unique completion of rank 5, hence this graph is bad. It needs at least 5 dimensions. And that to show that there is a unique completion, it's very easy because you have here 3 linearly independent things. So when you look at your matrix, if you try to complete it, you see immediately that these linear dependencies implies that the missing 3 edges are uniquely specified. So that's easy. O- Okay, so now how to go about, the question is now to show that the two special graphs, V8 and this one, have Gram dimension at most 4. So how would you show such a thing? How do you bound the Gram dimension of a graph? And so we will use, so what's the goal? So we are given some numbers, A, which are on the edge set of the graph and on the main diagonal, and the goal is to find a Gram realization of small rank. In other words, we want to find a solution X to this SDP. We want to find a PSD matrix X which agrees with A on the edges and on the nodes. And what we will do is same strategy as in Bell, Connelly, and Soignier. We are going to look for such a matrix by trying to find a solution X which has maximum entry in some direction. So we set up an SDP. So pick a non-edge. Edges are fixed. So pick a non-edge and look at this SDP. You find a solution X which has maximum entry at that pair. So this gives you an SDP. And the goal will be to solve this SDP. This gives you a Gram realization and then play with this realization until you bring it in the fourth space. And so again, it's enough, as noticed in the beginning, for simplicity, it's enough to look at data A, which have a PD completion. So which means that we may assume without loss of generality that this program is strictly feasible. So now let's look at the dual SDP, and this will be the key to the proof, is to use the dual information coming from the dual SDP. So now we will have our graph, and we will have this additional edge, non-edge, I mean, this additional pair. Let's call this the extended graph G hat. So, okay, this is the primal SDP. Let's write up the dual SDP, which reads like this. What are the properties of this primal and dual SDPs? So first of all, it's easy to see that the dual SDP is strictly feasible because we have variables on the main diagonal, so it's strictly feasible. So if the dual is strictly feasible, it means that the primal attains its optimum at some matrix X and there is no duality gap. So let's pick up a primal optimal solution X with Gram realization P. That will be the P which we are going to move out, play with. Second property now about the dual. So we assume that P is the primal is strictly feasible, hence the dual attains its optimum. So we have an optimal dual solution omega. And this is the optimality condition. X omega is equal to zero. And let's see what this tells us in terms of the Gram realization of the primal solution. This tells you that you have such a bunch of equalities, just rewriting the optimality condition. So these conditions are crucial in the proof. They are in the setting of Euclidean distance matrices, they are known as the stress equilibrium condition. So this is why we use again this terminology of the stress equilibrium. So in the Euclidean distance matrix setting, the dual solution is known as a stress matrix. So what this tells us is, and this is already done in the work of Soignier, that the dual SDP gives you a stress matrix. So it's handy so we have the dual matrix. Let's call the support of the dual matrix, let's call this a stressed graph. So what happens is that you have the primal solution, you have the dual solution, and the whole difficulty in the proof will be that it could be that some diagonal entries of the stress matrix are zero. The easy case of the proof will be when the stress matrix has no diagonal entries equal to zero, because then you have lots of linear relations. But in general, you may have some part which is zero. And then so the whole stress will be living on a part of the matrix. And that will be the stressed graph. And then if you look at, you have the corresponding partition of X, which will be, this is omega zero. And you will have something else, something else, something else. So the stressed graph is the part of the graph which is supported by the stress matrix. And so as I just said, the troublesome nodes will be the nodes which have a zero here. These are the zero nodes. They are the troublesome guys. And so this triple is what we start with. We have the graph, the extended graph. We have the starting realization coming from the primal optimal solution. And we have the dual solution, which is the stress matrix. This is the stress framework. So let's summarize what we know. So the stress matrix is PSD. It is supported by the edge set plus the additional edge, which we have maximized. And the stress edge is, I mean, this additional stuff is stress. It has a non-zero stress. So we already have for free that this additional edge is stressed. So in this case of V8, we are going to this will be the additional edge. And in the case here, so we will have this additional edge. And we know that these two red edges are stressed. We have the optimality condition, which implies that the rank of the primal solution plus the rank of the optimal dual is at most n. So this, if you are lucky that you can show that the rank of the optimal dual solution is large, this tells you that the primal is low. But unfortunately, it will not be so simple that you can already conclude like this in general. And the basic idea is to use the stress equilibrium equations to bound the rank of the realization piece. So you want to show that the rank of P is small. So in general, you are not going to be able to do that. At most, what you can do is, at least is here is already some information which you can derive directly from the equilibrium equation. So if you look, so in general, there are zero nodes. So your stress might only live in some small part of the graph. So this times this is equal to zero. So this implies, this is a non-zero matrix, so the rank is at least one. So this implies that the rank of this is at most n minus 1. So the number of stress nodes minus 1. And if the stress graph is not a clique, then you can even derive that it is at most the number of stress nodes minus 2. So this is a simple observation which should be very useful. That the rank of the realization which corresponds to stress nodes is at most n minus 2, the number of stress nodes minus 2. Except if the stress graph is a clique. So this is one of the keys of the tools which will be used in the proof. And then you will have to work out, so this tells you something for that part, and then you have to work out what's happening in the rest. So you have to turn it around. And this turning around is the heart of the proof. Okay, so here is a second key lemma. So which is here we do the turning around. So how does it go? So this is saying the following. So say you have here is your graph, and say you have a node. So I'm in these two settings. So the maximum degree is 3, and this lemma is saying the following: if the rank of what's below here is at most 4. Then I can turn the vector corresponding to this additional node. Simply use this click sum argument. And if you would have, you can extend this if you have here two nodes which form a stable set, and you can turn them independently. So if you have a stable set, then it's enough to show that the rank of what remains is at most 4, because then you glue the rest by turning the additional nodes. So this is one of the key which is used. Okay, let's observe there is no degree one node in the stress graph. Because if you have a degree one node, it gives you a linear relation between two vectors. So this would tell you that, this would contradict the assumption that we had a PD completion. So there is no degree one node. So the next thing is we can do something with degree two nodes. So if you have a degree two node, well, what you can do is contract this node. So you add the edge jk, and you forget about the node I. And the key is that if you have a stress matrix to this situation, then you have a stress matrix to this situation. And you even preserve positive semi-definiteness because you can construct a new stress matrix using a Schur complement argument. So if you have a degree, so the moral of this is if you have a degree 2 node, now forget about it, because anyway it's the PI is in the linear span of the PJ and PK because of the equilibrium condition. And then it's you contract and you get a new stress graph with less nodes. And then you try to show that this implies better bound on the rank of what's living on the stress graph. Okay, so let's see a sketch of the proof how you would do V8. So this is V8. So let's put... So as we just observed, we are done as soon as we can find a stable set, as soon as we can find a set of nodes T whose complement is stable and the rank of what's living on T is at most 4. This implies that you are done as soon as you can find 4 nodes whose vectors have rank at most 2, because otherwise you can just fall back to case 1. And you are also done as soon as you can find 3 nodes, not consecutive here, which span 3 vectors of rank at most 2, again because you fall back into case 1. Okay, so these 3 small steps are sufficient to do the proof in the case of V8. So 3 cases. Either there is a 0 node in 5, 6, 7, 8. So say 5 is a 0 node. This means that all these edges are not stressed. So if you look, then node 6 has 2 stressed edges at most. And this would contradict case 3. Hence, there cannot be a stress here. Hence, this node is a 0 node. So, and so on. So if one of them is a 0 node, all of them are 0 nodes. So in this case, the stress is residing only on nodes 1, 2, 3, 4. And this implies that 1, 2, 3, 4 have rank at most 2. And you are done by because of the case. So this first case is done. Second case, there is a 0 node in 2, 3. These two, well, same thing. If one of them is a 0 node, both of them are 0 nodes. And then this gives you this, if this is a 0 node, this is a 0 node, this edge is not stressed, and you get here 2 nodes of degree 2, you contract them, and you get a stress graph on less nodes, and this small lemma I put before already gives you the result. And the last case is, if there is no 0 node, well then it means that you have lots of stressed edges, and then you have enough information to conclude that the rank is at most 4. So this does the proof in the case of V8. So that was quite easy, V8. C5 times C2 is another piece of cake. It's more work. But it works essentially along the same lines, except, so let me just sketch now. So actually what we found is that there is a basic lemma we could show which helps simplify a bit the proof. And the basic lemma says the following, that we are done if... So this is the graph. So we are done if there are at least 4 2 nodes, and we are also done if there exists at least 1 0 node and 3 2 nodes. So maybe we don't see the proof, but this is along the same line as we just saw. And let me just sketch how we would do the first case when there is no 0 node. So we don't need to see the details, but just the 2 steps of the proof. So we could see that you could argue along these lines. Step 1, we assume that there is a 4 circuit, so this is a graph, assume that there is a 4 circuit of rank at most 2. So say these 4 nodes have rank at most 2, and the cut is stressed. So this edge is stressed, this edge is stressed, this edge is stressed, this edge is stressed. And then because of these stressed edges, you can conclude that these 4 nodes span the whole thing, and you're done. And all other 4 circuits work about the same. So this is the first situation. There is a 4 circuit which is totally stressed. And the second case would be no 4 circuit is totally stressed, the cut. So then it means that if you pick up any 4 circuits, then you find at least 1 0 edge. And the good thing if you have a zero edge is that it gives you two nodes. So as you have this property for every four circuits, this gives you enough for two nodes. And this is what we do. We show that this implies at least four two nodes, and then we are done by the basic lemma. So that's the first case, which is easy, no zero node. Now, second case, at least one zero node. So ideally, then, we would like to use the basic lemma, which says that it's enough to find three two nodes, because then we are done by the basic lemma. And this will work in almost all cases, except one case. So with one special case, when this scheme will not work, and this special case is when the stress is completely leaving over there. And this is a special case when this artillery will not work, and then you have to do one more step, which is iterate. So how did we get to so far? So the whole thing so far was maximize this distance here, or this entry here. Well, then you have to redo the game one time. So this labeling is good, but this labeling we have no way of putting our hands on. So what we do is we iterate one more time, fix this labeling, and pick up another labeling for the four remaining nodes, and get again a stress and work it out until you reach what you want. So that's the sketch of the proof. So very much along the lines of your proof, but in this setting of gram matrices instead of distance matrices. Good. So let me now go on actually to this other graph parameter, the extreme gram dimension. And actually, that was when we started working on this. This was our starting point actually to work on this graph parameter, which I will define in a second. But while thinking about it, we realized that we came up to this other previous gram dimension, and then we got caught in this topic, and so we solved this, and now very recently we moved back to this topic. So I just want to present a few preliminary results. We are not completely done, but. So let me just recall, EN is a set of all PSD matrices with diagonal entries 1, and let's call ENK all matrices of rank at most K, okay? So here is a trivial list of inclusions. E and K, so the set of matrices, diagonal ones, rank at most K, is obviously contained in the convex hull of E and K, which is obviously contained in the full set E n. That's trivial. Now let's take projection on the edge set of the graph, and you get the corresponding list of inclusions. So what we have done so far was to understand what are the graphs for which this guy here is equal to this guy here. That corresponds to the gram dimension. But the next natural thing is to understand when do you have equality here. And that corresponds to the extreme gram dimension. So the gram dimension, as I just said, the gram dimension is the smallest case for K for which you have equality between this and this. And now we introduce the extreme gram dimension as the smallest K for which the convex hull of the projection of ENK is equal to the elliptop of the graph. And in other words, this extreme gram dimension is the smallest k for which any extreme point of the elliptop has a completion of rank at most k. So you don't anymore insist that every point in the elliptop has a completion of rank at most k, but you only ask that this is true for every extreme point of the elliptop of the graph. Yeah, is the definition clear? Yeah, so before telling what I know about this parameter, let me tell you how did we come to this parameter, and our motivation came from the Grothendieck constant. So let me recall you how this Grothendieck constant comes up. So consider this integer program here. So you have a matrix A, but the objective function you sum up only on the edge set of the graph. And the variables are constrained to be plus minus 1. So you want to maximize sum of aij, xij, where x1 up to xn are plus minus 1. So this is an integer program. So it's hard. So what you do is you relax and you consider the SDP relaxation. So instead of having x1, xn, which are plus minus 1, you replace them by unit vector u1 up to un, and then you replace xi, xj by the dot product ui, uj. And the Grothendieck constant is precisely defined as the worst case ratio between the SDP and the integer program. That's known as the Grothendieck constant of the graph. So let's see. Let's look at first at the SDP. So here, what do you see? You see the inner product of unit vectors. So if you replace this by a matrix variable, so this means that you are optimizing over positive semi-definite matrices, diagonal entries 1. And the objective is you sum up only on the edge set. So in other words, this is an optimization problem over the elliptop of the graph. Now let's look up at so this is about the SDP, about the top one, so the integer program. Well, look here. Let's again, what is this here? This corresponds precisely to the positive semi-definite matrices, the diagonal entries of 1 and of rank 1. This is what it is upstairs. So upstairs, it's precisely optimizing over the convex hull of EN1 after projecting. And the convex hull of EN1, this is nothing but the cut polytop of the graph. So on the top is optimizing over the cut polytop of the graph. So this confirms what David was saying a few days ago, that whatever problem you look at, the cut polytop comes in. So in this, okay. So a lot of work has been done on the Grothendieck constant. It was introduced by Grothendieck in the 50s. And he studied, he could give good bounds on the Grothendieck constant for the case when the graph is a bipartite graph. And this Grothendieck constant comes up in lots of settings. It comes from operator theory, but it's also important in approximation algorithms, quantum computing. What here I just mentioned one of the results which is known for any graph, one has a good understanding of bounds on the Grothendieck constant. It's between the logarithm of the click number and the logarithm of the theta number. So there is, in this definition, there is a 1 here. You look at the convex hull of matrix of rank 1. So it's the upstairs, it's rank 1. So what your Brit, Fernando de Oliveira, and Frank Valentin have done is that they have studied the analog of this Grothendieck constant, but with rank k. So instead of insisting that here you have a rank 1 matrix, you now put a rank k condition upstairs. And you would get the SDP k over there. And then the Grothendieck constant of rank k would be the worst case ratio of SDP with SDP k. And if you wonder what are the graph whose Grothendieck constant of rank k is equal to 1, this precisely means that you want that the extreme gram dimension of the graph is at most k. Because having this equal to 1, this means that these two programs are the same. So this means precisely that the elliptop of G is equal to the projection of the convex hull of E and k, which corresponds to our rank k. So this was our starting point. We wanted to understand what are the graphs whose Grothendieck constant is equal to 1 for small k. Well, again, it's a minor monotone graph parameter, so there should be a characterization with excluded graph forbidden minors. For k is 1, it's quite easy. So the extreme gram dimension of G is at most 1, if and only if no k is 3 minor. So that's easy. So the next case of interest is what are the graph of extreme gram dimension at most 2? So we have two forbidden minors. Let me draw them. F6, so this is what we call F6. It's a forbidden minor. And the second one is G6, which is a special subdivision of K4. Yes. So these two graphs have extreme gram dimension at least 3. And the labeling which shows it, for instance, for this graph, is simply you put here the unit vectors, and each one is just a half the sum of both. So this is E1 plus E2, so E1 plus E3. And to show that it's a counterexample, so here is the labeling. What you do is you should show that the projection, so the little x corresponding to this, is an extreme point of the elliptop. And this is true because it is a unique, it has a unique completion, which is an extreme matrix of the big elliptop. So this is an extreme point. Actually, this is the whole difficulty in this question is now that you have to understand what are the extreme points of the elliptop. But this one does the job. And here you have also a corresponding labeling, and it works on the same pattern. You show that it gives you a little x, which has a unique completion, which is an extreme point of the elliptop on six nodes. So these are two forbidden minors. And what are the graphs which for which we do know that they have extreme gram dimension at most two? So K5 is good. K3 is good. So this needs a proof, but it's good. And what we call tree-like click sums of K3s and K4s. So not all click sums of K3s are good, because this one is forbidden. But if you have a click sums of triangles which avoid this, then it's good. So this is why we call them tree-like sum. So you are allowed to add, as long as you don't create this guy. This is good. You could also do such a thing with K4s. Again, put them as in a tree-like manner, as soon as you don't create this. So that this one has a good property is quite easy, because if you have take a little vector x, which is living on this, and which is extreme in the elliptop of G, and you would like to show that there is a completion of rank at most 2. That's what you have to show. Well, look at the... So you have triangles, so you have fully specified matrices here. So to show that you have a completion of rank at most 2, it suffices to show that each matrix here has rank at most 2. That's all you have to do. Show rank at most 2, and so on, because then you click some argument, you're done. So why is it true that every such matrix should have a rank at most 2? Well, suppose you have here rank 3 here. So corresponding matrix is 3 by 3, rank 3, so it's PD, it's positive definite. And then you can perturb its entries. So it has a free edge. So you can perturb this edge, and you would contradict the extremality of little x. So in this case, the proof is very easy. And so what you see is that the good click sums are those in which every triangle has a free edge, an edge which is not contained in any other triangle. And this is precisely what this structure is excluding. And here you have to go more deep into the structure of extreme matrices to do the proof. But and we think this will be the end of the story, that the whole class of graphs which will look like this, but we are still completing the proof. And this is ongoing work which we are also doing with Marianne Anach, which is now at CWI. So thank you very much.